Before we go any further, I'm going to ask the two participants we have here today. I should say the two scientists we have here today to introduce themselves. And this would be a great time if you have a shout out you'd like to give to anybody that helped with the project or that you want to say hello to regardless, to do so. And we'll just sort of work our way from right to left.
Hi, my name is Nadre Digbo, and I'm currently a rising senior at Fox Chapel Area High School. My main things other than physics that I do, I love to play the clarinet and I love running. And I just want to say like a shout out to my mom. So, hi.
Well, it's nice to meet you. Do you play in marching band at school?
Yeah, I'm the drum major in marching band.
Congratulations. That's huge. Were you drum major last year too?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you have in my high school band, it was sort of optional whether you used and played with a baton or not. Do you have a baton for your band?
Oh, no. At our school, we don't have a baton, but we mainly have, like, the drum major. They'll go onto the field sometimes, and they'll also play with the band.
That's a huge responsibility. Do the drummers tease you? Because I was a drummer, and we liked to give the drum major a hard time.
I mean, there's certainly some tensions between me and the percussion section right now.
Yeah. I'm just curious. It's an everlasting feature, I think. Well, that's great. Thanks for sharing that. And sitting next to Nadre.
Hi, my name is Sarah Rashed. I'm a rising freshman at Carnegie Mellon University, and I'm pursuing physics. Outside of the observatory and all the physics stuff, I like to play Frisbee, play video games, and I like to engage in the arts because I feel like as a scientist, it's very important to have both sides of yourself, like have a way to disengage from the sciences and relax, and then also go back into it. I think we should shout out Ms. Handren at the Allegheny Observatory, of course, who has helped all of this become possible, and Dr. Brian Battelle at the University of Pittsburgh, who served as our, like, particle physics advisor. And I'd like to say thank you to the rest of the Allegheny Observer's CERN team, because it was really a group effort that made this possible, and I'm very thankful for them.
You mentioned the arts. Is there a particular kind of artistic endeavor that you enjoy?
Yeah, I also really enjoy music, just music production. I haven't gotten into it myself, but I really enjoy seeing the process behind it. And I really like to paint and do digital art on my iPad in my free time. I find it very calming.
That's great. And you mentioned Frisbee. You're not an ultimate person, are you?
No, I used to be on the team, but now I do it more recreationally.
We have talked about this before, but one of our long-time staff members here was a big ultimate player, and we still have another person on staff who's a casual ultimate Frisbee player. Well, I'm wondering if the two of you can talk about this whole program, what Beamline for Schools is, how you got involved in it, and I know you two know each other pretty well, so I thought I would just ask if you two could explain the program so that we all know what it's about.
Yeah, I feel like it's a very good extension of what we already do at the observatory, where it's just physics outreach. So Beamline for Schools is this wonderful program where students from all around the world, whether they have access to their own laboratory or not, can submit a scientific proposal. And CERN will judge them based off creativity, feasibility, and safety. And then the winners will go to the laboratory in Geneva. And I think they expanded it so that it now includes two other particle physics labs. But it's just a way for students from anywhere to get access to the best laboratories in the entire world.
And, like, an additional thing, they also have, like, a subset where it's for outreach. So if you can write, like, a part of your proposal to them and make it so that it's showing that, hey, we could use more resources, or, like, we're reaching out in our community and helping our community with learning astronomy, then they will send us a telescope that is signed by, like, Nobel laureates from the CERN beamline.
Wow. Did you guys get telescopes? That's huge.
We were going to save that for the end, but we did win the International Outreach Award from Beamline for Schools. So we were selected as one of 15 from over 700 proposals from 4,500 students and 89 countries. So we will be getting a telescope signed by the Nobel laureates and CERN's Director General next year.
I'm sorry to sort of take your thunder away there, but that's amazing. So in all the world, they selected 15, and you're among the 15 teams. That is huge. Did you have to travel at all for these? They judged it based on the paper you submitted. It was refereed, peer-reviewed, and they picked you?
Yeah, we had to write let's say like 300-word little paragraph about what we do, how much we've helped people, and what we hope to do in the future. And I think it's like a panel at each of the laboratories, and they just read it and they vote.
Did they give you feedback at all on suggestions for additional research or any notes?
No, we don't get feedback directly from them, but like they do have things on their website where you can look at other people's proposals and you can use that to like help yourself and see like, okay, these people, they did good in this category, so then we can use that next year to help us and hopefully make like a better proposal.
So you get to collaborate with people even though you're not face-to-face with them. Well, can you describe your project? I'm curious to learn about it, and I'm sure you can in an understandable way.
Yeah, so our project, we focused on muon-catalyzed fusion. So basically, the way that that works is a muon is an elementary particle, and it can bind to atoms. So during the fusion process, because muons are so much denser than electrons, the atoms are already brought together a lot closer. So then whenever you want to actually fuse those two atoms together, it uses a lot less energy and a lot less heat. So it's a lot more commercially available and a lot more viable for the future fusion. So that's what we focused our project mainly on.
So we would be able to do fusion at temperatures ranging from room temperature to like sub-zero. And that's really helpful because right now a lot of the fusion we do is like super hot. And the issue we found is that muon-catalyzed fusion is this kind of like novel idea, so it hasn't been solved yet. And the main issue is that it takes a lot more energy to produce the muon for fusion than you get out of the actual fusion process. So there are a couple reasons for it. There's the alpha particle binding issue, where instead of catalyzing the reaction, so the muon, instead of helping the reaction, it goes off and it goes and mingles with other particles. We don't want it to do that. That's
so
not helpful.
It's endothermic, and you're looking for an exothermic reaction that will actually have energy as a result of it or deliver energy. Can you help? I want to put my head around the particles for a minute, because I have a pretty good knowledge of basic chemistry, and I think of atoms as electrons, neutrons, and protons, and you're bringing up another kind of particle that I'm not familiar with. And can you explain that? Is it muon, did you say?
Oh, muon.
Muon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What is a muon?
It's just a different type of subatomic particle where it shares the same charge as an electron, but it's a lot denser. I'm not sure if that, Nadra, do you have a better description?
I think that's a great description, but like mainly because it's so much heavier, but it takes up the same amount of space of an electron, it can have like slightly different properties and it will react a bit differently if it's binded to like a neutron or a proton.
That's a great explanation. So what your work looked, I think, at how to catalyze these reactions through the binding you just described. And Is there more beyond? I interrupted your description, so please.
No, it's all right. So the issue is that when you focus on the alpha particle sticking, we get into the realm of, like, you're so at the forefront of science that it's kind of unfeasible. And we talked about how the Beamline for Schools challenge focuses on feasibility but also creativity. So we wanted to focus on another aspect that would increase the efficiency. So muons are very, like, sneaky particles. They can pass through basically any material with ease. And so a lot of the time you're losing them during this process. So we tried to figure out what materials or composite materials we could use to block them so they wouldn't escape.
Yeah, so we looked into a bunch of different materials. One of the materials that we thought would be a good choice was aerogel because it's extremely porous, so there's a lot of, like, holes and such. And so when a muon goes through aerogel, it could be, like, trapped in those holes, and therefore it wouldn't, like, leave the whole experiment, like Sarah was talking about. We also looked into copper polyethylene. So that's already used sometimes in experiments like these, but copper polyethylene, because it's of its properties where it can, like, trap the muon in, we wanted to see how that could change and how that could work for us.
And we mainly chose copper because there's this equation called the beta block equation. And in a lot of variables and numbers and random things, it basically says, if you have a material of an element with a high atomic number, which is just its number on the periodic table, it will be more effective at slowing down a, quote, swift charged particle. And muons are swift charged particles. So when we found that, we were like, oh, this goes 1-to-1. We can work with this.
Yeah.
Wow. So your intuition, but also your research led you to create a copper based reactor. Do I have that right in which to do it?
No, we were figuring out, like, what material we could create an enclosure out of to kind of keep the muons within the reaction.
Okay. So copper was the enclosure
yes.
material.
Yeah.
Did it work?
So the proposal process is more of, like, a theory, and then we would head to the Beamline to test it out. Sadly, we were not selected, but I think this year was a very good example of how far, like, studying can take you, because our entire team had never done anything with particle physics before, ever. We were mainly, like, astronomy nerds. We like planets. We like stars. But I think we all just kind of huddled down for a couple weeks, and we had Zooms. We talked a lot. We made a lot of mistakes. We had a lot of misconceptions, but we figured it out in the end, and I think it's mainly due to the open source resources out there. And so I just want to thank everyone who's posting their, like, scientific articles for free and who's posting all, like, the CERN free particle physics courses.
This is fascinating. So the Beamline itself, is that something you can have access to do simulations? Or when you mentioned that you weren't selected to do that part of it, what would that have brought?
So if we were selected for that, they would have sent us, like, we would have gone on a plane and we would have gone to the actual, like, facility where they have all of their equipment and stuff.
I see.
And then we would have just conducted our experiment, but with their equipment.
I'm not even thinking about that. You do have to have a lab to actually do this work. So this would have given you access to that lab. Is that in Geneva?
Yes.
Oh, how cool. Yet, as you said earlier, you ended up placing tops in the whole wide world and received the telescopes, which we'll come back to in a moment. I want to be sure this question, that you take this in the right way, and because it's, I don't want it to sound like, so what? But what I do want it to help us understand is why this kind of basic research, in your opinion, matters. What, nice pun, huh? What could come from this to help us think more about the future? What might we learn from this kind of research?
I mean, I think this project and like Beamline in general, the great thing about it is that it encourages so many people to do like basic research and figure out smaller like issues. And if more people are working on projects and more people are looking into scientific articles or questioning what's going on in the world, then that can always help lead us as a society forward. And it can find a lot of different solutions to problems that maybe like I wouldn't think about, but someone else out there that's doing research, they can think about it and find a solution for something.
And I think a very interesting twist on that is that a lot of the time when you conduct an experiment and you get negative results or you don't get what you wanted, it's actually very important to tell people that so that they don't go on to make the same mistakes. So I remember early on in our iteration process, we were thinking about solving the alpha sticking rate, like the alpha particles with the muons going off with each other. And we were thinking about, oh, what if we created an area of charge and we like had some wires going around? And then we actually looked into it and it was like, oh, we need a magnet the size of the sun or something. So we very quickly proved that that would not be a feasible idea for anyone in the scientific community. Maybe in the future, though. But.
So ruling things out or the F word we're so afraid of, failing, is, you know, it's okay to come up with an idea that ends up not being successful because you help others rule it out and you rule it out too. I think that's really important to take risks like that. Did you find, and maybe it's true of the two of you, but across your team, did it take a while to become less risk averse or to be willing to try things? You two both seem to be pretty open-minded and willing to try things, but I'm curious if that's an attitude that takes a while to develop, because in school you're kind of conditioned to have everything turn out perfectly.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that helped our group work a lot was that we were willing to all listen to each other and listen to all of our different ideas that we had. So for a few days before we actually put our proposal together, we had multiple brainstorming sessions. And during those, we kind of just all shared our ideas. Everyone had like a certain amount of time and we would just say, here's what I think we should do. Here's what I found with quick research behind it. Maybe this could work. Maybe we could do this. And with that, we all kind of just stopped thinking about the risk behind it and the risk behind sharing and maybe sharing an idea that might not work, because we were all sharing at that point and we were just trying to figure out an idea that we could actually turn into a proposal after.
That's so well stated. You get over it and you get over yourself and focus on the work rather than yourself.
And another really important point is that a lot of people, when they think about sort of a group environment, they think of like, oh, there's a leader there and the leader's taking charge for everything. And they're like, you do this, you do this. I was the team lead on this project. I think the most important thing was that it's more of like a moderator role. You just want to make sure that everyone is being heard. So instead of being above people, you're integrated within the group and you're facilitating conversation. You're making sure that everyone feels welcome. And I think that we did a pretty good job of doing that because we had a lot of beginners in our group, including myself and Nandre. I mean, we're not the most crazy like particle physicists. And we were able to encourage, I think we had 9 in our group, we were able to encourage 9 teenagers who had never seen this stuff before to go out and to look at complex research papers. And I think the most important thing about that was when we regrouped, we talked about, I have no idea what this word means. Or like, I read this paragraph 4 times and I still like don't understand it. And we'd work through those issues together because I feel like it's really good if you learn and fail as a group. Like, it's a bonding process.
And was everybody high school aged?
Yeah.
And how often did you meet and over what ultimate calendar length of time?
So we did most of our project in like a relatively short amount of time. I think it was around like a week and a half.
I think it was about 2.5 weeks to maybe 3 on the higher end, which
yeah.
I do not suggest that.
Yeah.
No, that's incredible. During the school year?
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing to have crammed that much work into a relatively short period of time. How did you end up being leader?
It's not really like you're the leader, you know the most. It's more just like I'm used to organizing things and people and making sure that everyone's heard. So it was just like I'll make sure that, you know, we're staying on top of the schedule and stuff. But it was really a group effort. And I'm very happy that I had the team I had, because Nadre is very on top of things. The entire group is very on top of things. And I'm just really excited to see what everyone does in the future, because I think they'll be very successful as scientists or as anything they do.
Will this project continue? Is there another phase?
We're hoping to do another project and submit another proposal next year as well. So hopefully we can get our group back together and maybe spend more than 3 weeks on it.
I'm just amazed. By the way, I should have mentioned Sarah and Nadre are here, and we are talking about their, you know, world award winning project in the Beamline for Schools physics competition, which is organized by CERN, which is the European Laboratory for Particle Physics in Geneva. And so these telescopes you got, and then I just wanted to talk a little bit personally about each of you. So they're those have to be incredible. Can you describe them and who signed them?
So they're signed by Nobel laureates and also the director at CERN.
I'm not quite sure what type of telescope. I know that it's like a standard, you know, with the legs, and then it's maybe like a foot and a half long. It's one of the standard telescopes you'd see at like one of the amateur astronomer stargazing things.
Yeah, but it's the context in which you got from CERN, and to know that it came in contact with the hands of these great scientists. What an honor. That gives me chills thinking about that. So, Sarah, I know you're headed off to Carnegie Mellon. Is this your freshman year coming up?
Yes.
You feeling good about that?
Yeah, I'm very nervous, but it's more excitement than fear. So I'm very excited to be on campus in the next few weeks.
And I suspect you're majoring in physics. Was it important for you to go to Carnegie Mellon? Did you find that you liked the department there? I suspect that's true.
Yeah, I had been there for, I think you interviewed her. Her name was Husnia. There was a Carnegie
yes.
Mellon Summer Academy. Yeah. I was also in that program. And funny thing is that Husnia is now my roommate for Carnegie Mellon. Very funny. But yeah, that just showed me the campus. It showed me the professors. And I felt like I really connected with the teaching style and the, like, research focus, so I ended up choosing to go there.
As a fellow alum from quite a few years ago, I felt the same way. There was something, at least in my view at the time, there was a different feel to Carnegie Mellon than some of the other schools that I was looking at. Nadre, your senior year's coming up.
Yeah.
I know you've got to be excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking about college yet, or?
Yeah, I think like so far, I'm hoping to major in chemistry and have a minor in political science, and like I think my top college right now is probably Brown.
Knowing having some expertise in both of those areas, and to me especially knowing how society and issues informed by chemistry, the intersectionality there is really important, and you'd be a rare few that knows those kind of things. I'm sure both of you, no matter what happens, talk about the uncertainty again, it's going to be a great future ahead. Is there anything either of you would like to add? We just have a minute or two left.
We do have a Teen Science Cafe event tonight from 7:15 to 9:30 at the Allegheny Observatory. We are going to have retired astronaut and professor emeritus at Carnegie Mellon, Dr. Jay Apt. He will be giving a talk, and then there will be a ton of events for teenagers. So please get your tickets on Eventbrite. They are free, and they are running out soon.
And it's tonight at Allegheny Observatory?
Yes.
And, you know, I suspect it'll begin at dusk or a little later so the stars can be seen. Yeah. And you can learn more at observatory.pitt.edu. The Allegheny Observatory is in Riverview Park on the north side, easy to get to. Anything you wanted to add, Nadra?
I don't think I have much to add, but I was very happy to be on this radio today. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you both, and you're very welcome. And I hope we'll see you both again. Thanks. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Sarah and Nadre. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings from SLV Radio Productions. I need to hold you after school for just a moment. Theo of Aspinwall writes, do you have any other cool ideas for next year's competition? Do y'all know Theo? He's from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I think we do know Theo. Yeah, I think we were going to maybe go back to muons because they're just such fascinating particles. I mean, they can pass through like an entire pyramid in Egypt just straight through. It's crazy.
Yeah, so we're not exactly sure, but probably in some way like an extension of what we've already researched into.
Okay, so we answered Theo's question. Theo just made me think of something I need to do. Thank you both once again for being with us. Theo, thanks for checking in.